North Arkansas has been fabulous here lately. We've had some nice warm days, 60s, 70s, a little bit of rain here and there. Can't complain about any of that at all. So coming up, well, we're almost into April. On the 14th, 15th, and 16th of April, the North Arkansas fly fishers are having their annual sow bug roundup. This is, if you don't know about anything about this show, it's a pretty big show. They call it a celebration of fly fishing. There's going to be demonstrations by, there'll be about 100 tires there. There'll be seminars, tying and casting instructions. There'll be drawings. There'll be auctions. It'll be a lot of fun. I even understand that there's going to be a blind tying contest, as Fred Dupree was telling us in an earlier podcast. That should be a lot of fun. So the sow bug is basically a tying show. Man, tires come from all over the country, and there'll be a few here from overseas as well. That'll be interesting to see who's coming. I wished I could say who is coming, but I don't know. You know, I did say that this is a tying show. It's not a vendor show, but there will be vendors there. As they say, no Ginsu knives or insurance. So it'll be a fun show, and it'll be on the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, October 14th, 15th, and 16th. So our lake levels are definitely down. Bull Shoals is at 658, 70, with some much lower releases than we were having. It looks like anywhere from a 12,000 to as low as 2,100. So that's what, a unit of water, a little less than a unit of water. I imagine by the time the sow bug gets here, we will see some minimum flow, always assuming that we don't get a ton of rain. That seems to change everything. The North Fork is seeing some off water. It's mostly at night. They're doing a little bit of generating. Yesterday they generated for, looks like, about 5 hours between 6 in the morning and 11 in the morning. And then there was some waiting action until 6 o'clock the next morning. So, as usual, the North Fork will see waiting water long before Bull Shoals does. We were getting some shad kill the previous couple of weeks. That has pretty much come to an end. They're keying in on it still a little bit. Not like we'd like to see it. I also saw my first Racophilia, which is a caddis, and I saw it last Saturday afternoon when the sun came out. Man, was that a sweet sight. So our caddis hatch is starting to ramp up. Some of this lower water with some heat and some sunshine will definitely make that happen. And that is one heck of a fun hatch. That's a time when you can catch some brown trout, some big fish, some good fish doing that, as well as good rainbows. It's a good time to be here. Sorry, I have a little pollen's falling here. I've got to spray my truck every day right now and get all the green stuff off of it, and it's kind of affecting my voice just a little bit. I have a special guest today. I'll be bringing Mr. John Wilson, who is the president of Cortland Line Company, on board, and we're going to have a discussion about Cortland and the industry and fly lines, and I'll ask him some questions and see where it goes. I have with me today John Wilson, who is the president of Cortland Line Company. John took over the CEO position at that company this past summer. John is a native of Arkansas, grew up on the White River, or grew up fishing the White River. John was also the U.S. youth fly fishing team coach in 1996. He took that team on to win the silver medal at the World Fly Fishing Championships in Wales. John also earned first place at the U.S. National Fly Casting Competition at the ESPN Great Outdoor Games. John has had his own business in the past, and now he is at Cortland, a name synonymous with fly fishing. John, thanks for coming on board today. I hope you're doing well.
Hey, Jimmy, glad to be here.
Cool. So you took that spot over when this past June, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. End of June, I guess officially probably 1st of July.
All right. And I know that last year Cortland celebrated its 100th year in business. I know there's been a lot of changes in the fly fishing world over that time span. How do you see this industry moving, and where do you want Cortland to be, say, in a year to 5 years in that industry?
Well, you know, Jimmy, there's one thing that's kind of interesting, too. We looked up, or someone looked up, and I can't verify the accuracy of this, but there's something like 4 million corporations in the United States. And of those 4 million, only 560 are older than 100 years old. So, you know, to have a 100-year-old American corporation that has survived and thrived as long as it has is really unique. And in Cortland's history, you know, Cortland invented the weight forward taper. They invented tapered fly lines. They were part of the process of the change from, you know, basically PVC coated fly lines. They invented that process, the equipment, the pultrusion, all that sort of stuff. And Cortland has been on the cutting edge of technology in fly fishing for literally the past 100 years. And so going forward, you know, we've had that history of innovation, and that's where I want to see Cortland proceed. I want Cortland to be the most innovative fly fishing company on the market.
So are you guys currently working on some new innovations?
You know, we actually are. The Cortland was kind of run by business people for the last 15 or 20 years, and when a business person looks at
So are you saying like bean counters?
I wouldn't want to say that. Just someone who doesn't really fully understand why something that might cost more might be more beneficial or more preferred versus something that doesn't cost more. And, you know, Cortland is a company that all the products that we manufacture are manufactured in the United States here. We do have, you know, some stuff that has kind of gone offshore, and slowly but surely I'm bringing all of that production back to the United States of America. I personally believe there is nothing better than made in the USA. All of our fly lines are made here in the USA. And there's just something about that quality, engineering and innovation that needs to stay here. Products that are made in Asia basically have to give away your intellectual property in order to do that.
You're going a little bit fuzzy on me there.
Sorry.
There we go. You're back.
That intellectual property, innovation, and all that's all made in America, and we want to keep it here.
That's good to hear. I know that your braiding technology is legendary. I mean, I speak with customers on the phone, and you know they rave about your technology. You want to talk about that any?
Well, the fibers that we use for our braid is basically the same fiber that is used in bulletproof vests. It goes by many different names. You've heard Kevlar, Spectra, Dyneema, all those sorts of things, but you know, that's basically what a lot of people refer to as gel spun polyethylene. And that's the same material that we use for our gel spun backing. We have nylon and Dacron that we also braid. So the fact that we can braid and create all of our own fly line cores themselves, really gives Cortland a major advantage when it comes to technology of manufacturing fly lines. The core is literally that. That is the core of the product. And
it's the foundation.
It is the foundation. And that foundation is what creates the quality or strength of a fly line. If a core lines up, there's some proprietary processes that we do with our core that allows for a better bond chemically with the plastisols that go on the outside of it. The fact that we can manufacture our own core really kind of changes all that. I don't think that, to my knowledge, there is no other manufacturer, fly line manufacturer in the world that makes their own core. Everyone else buys their cores. And Cortland does supply core. So, you know, the fact that we have the best braid and the best core affects the quality of other fly lines as well.
It's also my understanding that you make some saltwater braid that is highly desirable. Does that sound right? I mean, I don't know a whole lot about saltwater fishing, period.
Well, yeah, there is. So the way the braid is constructed, we can make it so that it's flat, so that it's oblong, or so that it's totally circular. And that circular braid, a lot of people like to use. It's a product called C16 that stands for 16 carriers. And the fact that it has 16 carriers makes it almost a perfect circle. So gel spun backing, you know, if you're fighting a big fish, gel spun going through your hands can cut you. But C16, that's made out of the same material, since it's perfectly round, it kind of makes it like a silky smooth. And C16 might burn you, but it won't remove a finger if you have a big fish on. So a lot of people like to use our C16 for the leader portion, anywhere the angler is going to be handling a fish or anything like that. They'll use that C16.
What's the brand name, or what do you call that particular?
Master Braid.
Master Braid. Okay.
It's called Cortland Master Braid.
Okay.
And also our. We have a proprietary process that is color fast. So our braids and that polyethylene is very, very difficult to get a good bond on the color. And our braids don't bleed. They don't lose their color. So the natural fiber material is white. So anything that will hold that color longer is, you know, more desirable. Because through use, that will eventually, you know, it's like a colored T-shirt. It fades over time in sunlight. And ours does not fade nearly as quickly as all the other stuff on the market.
That's a good thing to know. So I know that before you got there, Cortland was making, I don't know, 50,000 different products, or selling 50,000 SKUs, I suppose. I know you've cut back on that number. Was it just too many products?
Yeah, it was. Well, they had 50,000 SKUs of inventory, and they had roughly 6,800 SKUs of unique product offerings. And I cut the product offering back to about 1,000 SKUs.
1,000. Okay.
Of product offering, and then in each one of those product offerings, there might be 5 or 6 different SKUs of individual parts and components that would be used to make up that particular piece. So, in a fly line, you've got core, you've got one color plastisol, you've got 2 color plastisols, you've got beads and all sorts of things, you know, color and all that. So a fly line might have 5 different inventory SKUs that go to make that. But we had 6,800 SKUs of product, and I cut that down to roughly 1,000. And I'll probably add another 500 back in this season. Some of those need to come back. But it was unmanageable. I mean, it was absolutely unmanageable, and it was confusing. And it was just, you know, it had gotten completely unruly. So when I got here, I kind of cut with a chainsaw. And some of it didn't need to be cut. So I'll be adding some back.
Okay. So it's a good, it's, well, some things sell better than others, and I guess when they go away, people start screaming for them to come back. Is that kind of what's happening?
Well, yes, to a certain extent, that's exactly right. And some of it is just, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to manufacture. I know we had a product called LC-13, which is a lead core shooting line or a lead core line. And you know, there's been so much demand for that lead core line to come back, I'm kind of debating with myself as to whether or not that's something we really need or don't need. A lead core is very difficult to get a loop formed. So it's kind of a trolling line, and I can get a lot of the same performance just by, you know, carefully designing a tungsten coated line. And intermediate lines and things like that, there's some chemistry that we can change and get the same performance for less money for the consumer in the long run. So, you know, I kind of have to go through that decision process. There's a product that does a specific job, so whether I want to bring that particular product back or a different product that does the same job, those are the decisions we have to go through.
And some of those decisions aren't very easy. I know that it sounds like making fly line is, you know, it's not done in the kitchen sink or in the oven. It sounds like it's a little more chemistry and engineering involved than most people think it is.
Well, the fly line taper is the easy part. The getting a bond to a core is probably the most difficult thing that a manufacturer has to do. And I cannot tell you how many brand name fly lines out there that don't have a bond to their core, and that is critical to the quality and the longevity of a fly line. And the average, you know, I was a caster. I mean, I very, very much studied casting. I was a master certified casting instructor with the Federation, taught casting. I was a national champion. So I absolutely pay a lot of attention to the equipment that you use in fly casting. And the rod is a component in that, but by far the most important component in fly casting is the fly line. The quality, the core, the shape of the core, the size of the loop that it forms, all that sort of stuff is really integral into the fly fishing experience. Okay? So what your core is made of, the stiff, so a soft core forms a tighter loop, a stiffer core forms a larger loop. The specific gravity of the floating line, the running line, as to whether or not your running line sinks or if your tip sinks, all those performances are all, you know, that's where your real math, your real engineering, and your real chemistry has to come in.
And that all has to work like a dance, a ballet, and with the rod and with the rod included thrown in there.
But when the rod stops, the fly line goes to work.
That's right. And then there's some more physics that go in that, but we won't talk about that. So, explain to our audience how a fly line is made. I mean, briefly, so to speak.
There are two major processes that you use to make a fly line. One is pultrusion. One is extrusion. Okay, and to my knowledge, Cortland is the only company that does both.
So, what is pultrusion? I mean, I know what pultrusion is. Ranger Boats does a pultrusion process with their fiberglass, and it's heavy, it's strong, and you can't break it.
Well, so that is probably the most popular method for constructing a fly line. You pull a core through a plastisol, and as you pull that core through, it coats the outside of the core. Okay. Extrusion is the core goes through a machine, and a plastisol is extruded over the top of the core in order to coat the outside of it. So one, you know, it's basically a passive method, and the core actually collects it as it comes through on the up, and on extrusion, it's actually forced over the top. It's force made over the top of it.
Okay, and I would assume that that bonding process you talked about, one of those methods is probably better than the other.
Well, we use a nanotechnology that actually forms a molecular bond to our core when it comes through. And if you don't have that bond, then the material has a tendency to hot dog, or you can put your thumbnail on it and basically strip it like a piece of wire, right?
Right.
If you've ever done any electrical work or anything like that, that's an extruded. That's a pultrusion kind of method for electrical wire. You can just basically pull that plastic right off the top of a wire. A fly line that does not have a good bond on the core, you can take your thumbnail and just pull it right off. Where ours, you would actually have to get a knife and cut it off.
Gotcha. So you'd have to sort of carve it off, so to speak.
Yep. That's
okay.
Correct.
I sell your products as a fly shop, and I've had the opportunity to speak to knowledgeable fly fishermen kind of around the country, and one fellow I spoke with was commenting on an unnamed manufacturers who. Cortland is real accurate by calling something. If it's a double taper six, it actually weighs out at a six. Or if it's a weight forward six, it weighs out at a six. Or if it's a 12, it weighs out at a 12. And this guy was sort of complaining that there are some manufacturers out there that don't necessarily do it that way. In fact, he even says they do it with their rods.
But you wanna, they match their rod.
Right. I mean, why would people do that?
So, if there's an awful lot of marketing in fly fishing, and I mean, remember, we're in an industry where a 16-inch fish is an 18-inch fish.
Yes.
By the time we get home, so our math is a little fuzzy to kind of begin with, and if absolute accuracy is what you want in fly fishing, the last thing I ever wanted was a tape measure in my boat. Right.
That's true.
Or
a scale.
There's a lot of poetic license that's being taken in our industry right now. And Cortland, Leon Chandler was the president of the Fly Tackle Manufacturers Association and introduced the system that we use today that has, you know, seven weights, five weights, all that, and it's measured in the first 30 feet of fly line. Well, back in the day, that system was, you know, well ahead of its time, and there was no system that they used to be able to match fly lines with rods. And so for 20 or 30 years, everyone stuck with that system. Now, there is a little bit where, you know, people talk about fast action, faster action, faster action for fly rods, and they started manufacturing rods that have a five-weight label on them that are actually a six-weight. So in order to match the rods up with the lines, they started making lines that were a six-weight that were labeled a five-weight. And all the marketing and math has just gotten a little bit fuzzy on that. All of our fly lines are true line weights. I think going forward, we're going to have to more accurately label the head length in terms of grain weight. Years ago, the standard head was, you know, 30 to 35 feet, so that was the length that they used. Now it's more of a head weight. We make some fly lines that have a head that's 60 feet long. So to say that head weight is, you know, 250 grains would be more accurate than to say the first 30 feet is 100 grains. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you really kind of need both. And I'm not saying that anyone else is wrong for what they're doing, just that it is a little bit misleading.
So they're just, they're, they're just using that kind of system to make it work with the rods that they build, or vice versa.
Well, or that is their method for. I mean, I don't know who we're talking about here, but that is one method of going to market.
Okay.
Is, you know, this rod works with this line, and there are, you know, several rod manufacturers that suggest a line that goes with a particular rod in a particular situation. And I'd say all manufacturers do that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Regardless of whether they're big or small, you know, this is the weight of the line that you need. But that is very variable, Jimmy. I mean, think about it. If you said, you know, the first 30 feet of line, who casts 30 feet anymore? You know, it's not uncommon for someone to try to cast 50 feet. And 50 feet of fly line weighs a lot different than 30 feet of line does. So it's important to be accurate, but it's also kind of important to give it a little bit of license, because there is no absolute measurement like this is the weight that you need to use, because you'll cast different lengths and you'll have different lengths of fly line at the end of the rod tip.
Which is why you buy different kinds of fly lines for different situations.
That's exactly correct.
Right.
That is exactly correct.
So what is your best-selling freshwater and saltwater fly line?
Well, we have several different variations of things that do different jobs. Okay, and our Trout Boss line is a long head, high floating freshwater fly line. Our Modern Trout is probably a more, you know, it's a single color. It is maybe a little less expensive, but the same sort of technology. Our extruded lines on the saltwater side, the Liquid Crystal series, the Liquid Crystal has caught the last four world record tarpon. And that is probably a hidden gem that very few people know about, except those people that are truly on the inner circle. And it's not an accident that is the line that has caught the last four world record tarpon, probably because 90% of the fishermen out there use something different. But the small percentage of the people that use that line are the ones that are the most successful. And same thing with some of our trout lines. Those people that are truly in the know, like the world the fly fishing team, the U.S. fly fishing team, used all of our gear this year, and the youth team almost swept the medals using our gear.
That's right.
It is the height of technology. So, you know, there's a small percentage of people that know what we make and know what the quality is, and then, by and large, the rest of the public is more concerned with what is popular, what is cool.
Right.
You know, which is, you know, talking about kind of the marketing side on the cores, there's a big push towards low-stretch cores. And that low-stretch technology is, in my opinion, complete marketing. First of all, there is no fish that is harder to get a hook set on than a tarpon at distance. So it is really difficult to get a good hook set in a fish like that. Our Liquid Crystal series uses a mono core, and mono is the highest stretch core material that we have. It's no accident that is what is used to land the most of those fish. In terms of sensitivity, any sort of a braided core is going to have considerably less sensitivity. And if you have no stretch, you're a lot more likely to bounce a fish off. Okay? So one of the things that I did as a guide was I boiled all my leaders.
That's
to
right.
Give it just that much additional, to give it that much more additional stretch in a hook set. And just, you know, the low stretch core is a mistake in my mind. I think it is a huge mistake to follow that path. And it's to each his own in that regard, but another issue is that the material that is used in those low stretch cores, by and large, is a material called Vectran. And if you want to try an interesting experiment after this interview, if you can find a fly line that has a Vectran core, just tie a knot in the running line and pull it. See what happens. It'll break like 6X. So any kind of kink, any kind of flaw in that Vectran core, that the fly line will separate. Whereas mono and some of those softer materials, they have a lot higher knot strength. So have you ever thrown a tangle in a fly line? Have you ever stepped on a fly line in a boat? Have you ever gotten a kink, anything like that? It's just those fly lines are not durable at all.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're just no durability at all whatsoever. So,
as a guide, I deal with that braided a lot.
Right. You know, and, you know, a glass rod is probably going to be very, very strong, but it's also very fragile. And that's essentially the same thing with these low stretch cores. They're very, very strong, but they're very, very fragile.
And you guys are not going in that direction with your lines?
We are not going in that direction.
Okay.
Ever with those lines. And, you know, I don't want a line that's too stretchy, but you need some. You do want some stretch to that. Part of the what makes a fly rod a good fish landing tool is that it has a lot of give. So it protects light tippets, keeps you in contact. And in terms of sensitivity, any braided core is going to be a lot less sensitive than a solid piece of material. So, you know, mono, anything like that, is going to give you direct contact, whereas a braided core is going to remove some of that sensitivity.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, there is a lot of marketing out there with low stretch fly lines, and we're hearing about it. I mean, I don't want to beat up on anybody. What, you know, I've been selling some fly lines in Europe. They're very, very popular. You don't make different fly lines for Europe than you do for the U.S. market, do you?
A little bit. Lake fishing is extremely popular in Europe or reservoirs. And so we kind of have to build some specific lines for that market that would not be popular here. And for instance, our clear camo is one of the most popular stillwater reservoir fishing lines. And in that first 2 feet of surface, that's probably, you know, it's an extruded line, so it's one of the most popular lines that there are, especially in Europe. But in the United States, there's very, very little reservoir fishing, so that's not a big seller over here.
Right.
And the variety of lines that you need for reservoir fishing is considerably more extensive than it is for that market than it is for this market.
Okay. All right. So it's a bit more, yeah, you're right, a bit more specialized. Also,
it's different. It's just a different style of fishing by and large.
Okay.
But, you know, other than, you know, the river lines, they're all pretty well the same. Although we have our competition line is very, very popular over there. Our silk series is very popular over there. And we sell a lot more level lines over there than we do in the United States.
Right. So other than fly lines, what else do y'all make? I mean, you talked about the master braid for saltwater. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, Jimmy, I'll tell you what. Since you're a friend, I'll give you a little bit of a scoop. But you have to promise not to tell anybody.
Oh, nobody will hear this.
Absolutely. So this is super secret. Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
We have an extremely, extremely high in fluorocarbon that we're about to start testing. And this isn't going to be exactly correct. My numbers might still be a little fuzzy, so don't hold me to this. But the refractive index of water is something like 1.42. And the refractive index of fluorocarbon is 1.68. So it very closely matches the refractive index of water. Well, we've got a fluorocarbon that's coming out that's going to be somewhere between 1.42 and 1.68. It's got a fluorine coating on the outside that more approximates the refractive index of water. Secondly, we've got a new proprietary process that is going to allow this fluorocarbon to be virtually pure. So no air pockets, no weaknesses, no anything. Also, another proprietary process that's going to give it, there's variation in the thicknesses of a lot of the extruded materials. So you might have, 4X should be 7/1000ths of an inch as it comes off. And that may vary to, 0.8 to 0.6 kind of as it comes through that extrusion process. And we're going to use a more proprietary process that gives an even better accuracy as to what that is. So the material will be much more uniform. Okay?
Right.
And lastly is this will be a softer, higher knot strength fluorocarbon. So there's, everyone kind of considers brake strength. When they look at a spool, they go, okay, the brake strength on that is, 8 pound, whatever. Okay, well, that's all fine and good, but the more rigid that you make the material, it gives it a higher brake strength, but a weaker knot strength.
Right.
Okay. So what we've got is a good blend between, it gives it enough elongation that it makes it soft. So if you throw a tangle, you can still get your tangle undone. It doesn't fish like wire does. So it's virtually invisible, has a higher knot strength, and is soft enough so that if you do tie a tangle or something like that, you're not having to completely retie.
That sounds exciting.
It, in my opinion, it will be the best fluorocarbon on the market by far. By far.
I'm happy to hear that.
We'll have some test materials available probably within the next couple of months, and I'm gonna pass out some to our pro staff, some of our guides. And kind of get some field testing done on that. And if it proves to be successful, hopefully it'll be available in 2017.
Cool. I hope I get a spool of that.
Well, you might.
Okay,
you certainly
cool.
might.
All right. So, yeah, fluorocarbon's really big. just a quick thing. A lot of folks don't understand how this X system that we use here, I guess they don't use it in Europe. They just simply use millimeters. But 11 being the magic number, 7,000. So if you take the 7 and subtract it from the 11, you get the 4X. You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, when tippets were first made, I guess they were, I don't know exactly the full history on this, but I think tippets used to be extruded through a die out of gut, and the die was a reciprocal of 11,000ths. So 0X would be 11,000ths of an inch thick. 1X would be 10,000. So 10 plus 1 is 11.
Right.
4X would be 7,000ths. So, 7 plus 4 is 11. 6X is 5,000ths. 7X is 4,000ths. So it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And, there was a 12X on the market not long ago. Well, there is no such thing as 12X. There's no such thing as 11X. And, in fact, 10X would have to be 1,000th of an inch thick. So, that even there is no 10X. It just doesn't make sense to do that.
Right.
So, again, this is kind of back to marketing. And since there is no measured standard in the United States, there are some really popular tippet manufacturers out there that their 4X material, they say it's stronger than everybody else's. But the reason it's stronger is because it's really 3X.
Ouch.
And since there's some variation in the thickness of the material, they can take a golden sample and say, ours breaks at 8 pounds. Well, it breaks at 8 pounds. You know, 1% of it might break at 8 pounds, but all the rest of it breaks at 7 pounds. So there's that golden sampling. And there's a lot of variation in tippets and the quality of those tippets and the performance that they the performance that someone might claim versus what it actually does. And here again, it's all marketing, and that's good.
And, you know, I sell a micrometer in my shop, and you can take the micrometer to some of these claims, and they're not always what they say they are. That's for sure.
Well, I want to be careful with that, because I'd hate to have a tape measure taken to myself a lot of times, especially on what I call a 20-inch fish.
Right.
But nobody
can make everything perfect. You can't make everything perfect.
No.
Right.
No. And I certainly, I want to qualify that considerably. But, over the course of time, it becomes fairly obvious that there is a fair amount of marketing in fly fishing. And when a 6-weight rod is now a 5-weight, that's just part of our industry.
All right.
And forever and always, if I have someone catch an 18-inch fish, I don't care what happens, it's a 20. I'm telling him it's a 20, and I'm telling everybody I know it's a 20. So that's just part of the game.
Like guessing weights. Anyway, I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, that 18-inch fish is at least 10 pounds.
Yeah, and as we say around here, and by the time you get home, the picture itself will weigh 20. So, so one more serious question. So you haven't been at this job quite a year yet.
Right.
And, I mean, you've owned your own business before and managed people. So kind of what were some of the biggest hurdles you had to overcome in going into the steerage of Cortland?
Yeah.
I know you've got some good people. I've talked to them. They're great.
And they've been chomping at the bit to get to work. They just haven't had the opportunity to do that. And I mean, these are very, very knowledgeable people that are, on their off hours and off days and all that, they're on the river fishing. I mean, they know what they're doing. But, they've been shackled by management that hasn't let them do what needs to be done to do their jobs.
And they've had management that really didn't fly fish much, did they, or did they not?
Well, it's not so much that they didn't fly fish. They just didn't understand, when someone said, look, you need a fly line that does this. For instance, when I first got here, one whole series of floating fly lines that they had did not float.
That's a hurdle.
And that was the kind of thing that went through a lot of the products that they had here. And the thought process was, well, we spent $25 per line manufacturing those. There's 1,000 of those lines sitting on the shelf. We'll sell them. We'll just reduce the price and we'll sell them. And the difference in the way that management did, I had all those fly lines pulled off the shelf and cut into little bitty pieces. I didn't want anyone to know that we ever made anything like that, ever. And going forward, nothing will leave this factory unless it is the absolute best product that we can make ever again.
And that's what us as fly fishermen are looking for, is a line that gives us the performance that we need and that lasts.
Well, it will be the best job that we can do, or it's not leaving the factory. If it has a blemish, if there's anything wrong with any product that we make here, we cut cut it up and we throw it away.
Okay, good.
Or recycle it or something like that.
Right.
I mean, we make good use of it. We use recycled wood products on our spools. We use recycled paper when we can, and we recycle a lot of the materials that we have here. But nothing's going to leave this factory unless it is the absolute best product. We have a very, very strenuous quality control process now.
That's good to hear. Because, well, I won't go there. Any last thoughts or anything you want to add to this?
Well, this is probably the funnest job I've ever had in my life. I'm still in fly fishing, but I'm not out in the weather every day like you are. And being involved in this, you know, as a guide, you got to go out and spend a day with someone and, you know, have an experience of a lifetime together. And Cortland, we're not curing cancer. We're not adding years to anyone's life. We're just adding life to someone's years.
Oh, that's a good way to put that. So are you, I know you've been traveling and doing some shows. Is that pretty much wound down, or are you still doing any of that?
Well, the show season's pretty well over.
It's okay.
And trout season starts here on Friday. Guess where I'm going to be Friday morning?
I give up.
Yeah.
All right, you going to be trout fishing?
Probably.
Which line?
I may not answer my phone.
Which line are you?
Line.
Which line and weight are you going to use?
Well, it'll be a five weight floating trout boss, I'm sure.
Okay. 444, 333, drop boss, you said. No, wait.
Drop boss.
Okay.
Yeah, we have 444. The difference in the series of lines is the Precision series has two loops. We use a higher grade plastisol, and that's very often a two-color line. The 444 series has the same performance. It doesn't have all the loops. It doesn't have the nice packaging. And it's generally a one-color line. So you're going to get quality no matter what you do.
Okay.
And just the Precision lines are manufactured with a little higher precision process.
Okay. And they obviously cost a little more money.
Yeah, they do cost a little more money, but you definitely get what you pay for.
This is true in anything.
Yep.
John, I really appreciate your time today. I want to have a little bit of fun and ask you five quick questions. They're kind of goofy,
okay,
but it just sort of gets to know you a little more. What's your favorite food to eat?
Mexican food.
Mexican food. Who's your favorite movie star?
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. Gee, I wonder in which movie. No. All right. So I know you fished in a lot of countries. Where is the one country or place that you've always wanted to fish but haven't done yet?
Wow. There's so many. Maybe South Africa.
Okay.
Tiger fish, something like that. That looks interesting.
Okay. All right. Basketball, football, baseball, rugby, cricket, fox hunting. When you were a kid, I mean, did you ever have any big dreams of making it into the big leagues?
You know, I always thought I thought for sure I was going to be a pro baseball player. I played little league shortstop and through high school, and was going to take a shot at college ball, but my grades really suffered my freshman year, and I never got to play baseball.
Ooh, that sucks. Yeah, baseball was my deal too, but oh well, it never happened. John, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. Perhaps when you get your new tippet thing going out, we can have you on again and talk about that, or if you've got something else new you want to talk about, we can get together and do it again if you like.
Okay, Jimmy, we'll expect a lot of new stuff coming out of Cortland over the next 2 years.
I'm looking forward to that. John, once again, we appreciate your time, and we'll chat with you later. Thank you much.
Let's go spend some time on the White River, Jimmy. Put me into one of those big brown trout that you got there.
When's your next trip down here?
Man, I don't know. I need to plan one, though.
Well, we kind of sort of had one going in January, but the water took care of that, didn't it? Yeah, just what we need, more floodgates this year, right?
Well, look at how big the fish are going to be when the floodgates go down.
This is true. That's the flip side, is they get lots of food, so yeah. And we even had a little bit of a
As soon as that water starts going down a little bit, you need to call me because I need to be there.
Well, it's actually kind of started yesterday. We're like 2 units, I think. Man, we're right at normal pool. You know, we should start seeing some minimum flow here pretty quick. Although they're calling for rain tomorrow, we'll see what happens.
Well, put me on your calendar. You're as plugged into that as anybody in the world. So
okay.
One of the best guys with some of the best water in the world. I would love to spend a day in the boat with you.
I appreciate that. Now, in full disclosure, John, we have fished together before many times and done trips together because you guided down here for several years.
Well, I'm not guiding anymore.
You're not guiding anymore. That's right.
I'm trying to butter you up because you have a boat and I don't.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Anytime you want, give me a shout and I'll take you fishing. Bring somebody with you.
Yes, sir. All right, man. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for your time. Bye now. Okay.